You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com. I need some touch in.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott. Traditional Chinese medical practitioner keeps the alternative medicine wackos at bay. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And she who will do most anything for a glass of expensive wine, it's Lady Diagnosis, everyone.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey, this is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you've got a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at Lady Diagnosis, Lady Diagnosis or Dr. Scott WM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcast medical news and stuff you can buy, or go to our merchandise store, cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. Yeah, really. Hey, by the way, whoever bought the Night Force scope at stuff.drsteve.com for $3,000, we salute you.
We do?
Yes, we do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. For those about to buy at stuff.drsteve.com, we salute you. No, it was $3,000 thing. So our
gotcha.
You know, that was
I thought you were praising them for their choice in purchase.
Well, that's awesome too. But you know, thank you for making that large purchase on stuff.drsteve.com. It really does help to keep the show on the air. So we appreciate it. While we're at it, might as well talk about tweakedaudio.com. Use offer code FLUID, F-L-U-I-D, for 33% off the best earbuds on the market for the price and the best customer service anywhere. And Dr. Scott's website at simplyherballs.net. And if you forget these things, you can go to drsteve.com, and I've got all those links right there on every show. simplyherbals.net. I said this last time, somebody cussed me out on the voicemail because I was talking about attaining my ideal body weight, and I was measuring my BMI, which is now like 22, and he was like, BMI stupid, and you're just, you know, walking bones at this point. And it's like, oh, whatever, let me do what I want to do. But that's, yes, BMI sucks. But it's what we got. And it's, you know, compared to when I was a BMI of 30, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So that's all. It just is a relative measurement. It just shows that I've had a significant weight loss. But anyway.
Congrats.
And thank you very much. And I did it using Noom, the app. I highly recommend it. I can get you $20. Two free weeks and 20% off by going to noom.drsteve.com. You can try it for 2 weeks. You just don't get the group and group counselor until you pay up. But it, unlike Weight Watchers, which will just charge and charge and charge, at least in my experience, and Noom is less expensive, and you're only going to do it for 3 or 4 months, and that's all you got to do. So it's self-limited. It's not on and on and on. No points, none of that. And it's a psychology app. It's not a diet. So, and I love it. It changed my life. And I even... You know, I splurged today. I had what the hell I wanted to eat today. And
go crazy, Dr. Steve.
Yeah, every once in a while. And it even tells you to do that. Yep. It's built into the thing. Today is a no guilt, do whatever the hell you want day. And you have to learn how to do that so that you don't feel like you're depriving yourself. I never feel like I'm depriving myself. Mm-hmm. And that's the key. If you say this is forbidden food, mm-hmm. what's going to happen?
You want it.
You want it. And then you crave it. And then when you actually give in, you're going to go nuts. And then you're going to feel guilty afterward, and then the cycle repeats.
Well, at work, we do how if someone brings cake or something, someone will say, is it worth cheating for? Because
yeah.
sometimes just cake is not worth it. But when you make it worth something,
yeah.
then you have to justify.
Well, that's right. Well, yeah, if you plan for it.
Yeah.
You know, if I can have this, but I'm going to trade it for doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, I might gain a pound today mm-hmm. because of what I ate for lunch today,
mm-hmm.
but it'll be back off tomorrow. So, you know, I don't worry about it. I don't recriminate anymore. And I was complaining to my counselor. I think I may have said this on the show, that I was gorging or binging on these rice cakes. Quaker makes these rice cakes. They've got a caramel one, they've got an apple cinnamon one, and then they have a cheddar cheese one, and they're all the devil. and I was complaining, you know, I just, in the afternoon, I'm binging on these, and right halfway through that conversation with her, I realized I was complaining about binging on rice cakes when back in the day, I would binge on French fries and binge on, I would eat a whole bag of Snickers.
Hookers.
Mm-hmm.
So, hookers. Yeah, I'd like to binge on hookers. You know, that shit should be legal,
too.
I need
yeah.
to be able to binge on hookers.
I tell you. Well,
the only time I've ever met a hooker was when we interviewed that woman for this show.
Yeah.
Were you here
yeah.
back when we were doing that?
Yep.
And that's the only time.
She's real sweet.
Yeah, she's very nice.
Yeah.
But that's the only time. I don't think I've ever even seen a prostitute out in the wild.
Mm. And you wouldn't know.
And I think that's what it is. I'm too dumb to know. Yeah. Just to show you how dumb I am sometimes, I don't get it because I don't think that way. Someone gave me a pair of candy pants, you know, edible underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is gross, because what I thought you were supposed to do, because what it was a big, the fabric was like a fruit roll-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it tied with a licorice stick. Diane is nodding her head like she's probably done this multiple times.
Yes.
So in my mind, this is what you did with those, is you put it on and then you went and you ran around, went hee hee hee, and then you were supposed to take it off and eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, that's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was maybe
what the fuck are you supposed to do with it?
Oh, so good. I'm glad you don't know either.
No. I figured that's what you'd have to do.
No, so I'll tell you in just a second, but 2 years later, I'm walking down the street and it just hit me and I went, don't. 2 years later, it finally hits me what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to eat them while they're on the person.
Oh, sure.
You see?
Yeah.
So somebody's wearing it, mm-hmm. and then you...
eat
know,
through to get to the...
Yeah, it gives you something.
The prize.
Yeah. So somebody gave me that, and I had this really cool girlfriend. I'm not going to say her name, but she knows who
Debbie.
She is. No.
Debbie Downer?
No. Well, but two of my ex-wives were Debbie. One was cool and the other one not so much. But I had this girlfriend and somebody gave me some edible underwear. At this point, I knew what it was for. But she and I smoked then. And so she and I went out to smoke. And she was so cool because she was gorgeous too. And when she came back in, she's just twirling the tie as if I had already eaten,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you know, everybody was like, ooh, and I was
coolest.
She just made me look good,
mm-hmm.
you know. She made me look good just by hanging out with me. But then she would go the extra mile to make my friends think that there was more going on than there was. But anyway. All right. So anyway, check out noom.drsteve.com. 2 free weeks and 20% off if you do decide to continue. And If you want archives of the show, there's two ways now. You can go to premium.drsteve.com, use offer code FLUID for 3 months. It's $1 a month. And then after that, it's $2 a month. You have access to everything in our archives. The best way to do it is to download the Weird Medicine app from the App Store or Google Play. But you can do it. There's other ways that you can do it. That's premium.drsteve.com. Or you could just go to drsteve.com for $30. I'll burn you a 32 gig thumb drive.
That's a deal.
So you get a 32 gig thumb drive and you get every show that we've ever done up to the point when I burn it. So that would, you know, if you do it next week, that'll include this show. And, and it's $30 with shipping. So there you go. Anyway, all right. What else? You guys got anything?
No.
Okay. Nope. So I answer questions over on Reddit at the subreddit. It's just called Dr. Steve. And somebody had asked me about this study, and we're going to need to get our calculators out, Dr. Scott.
No.
For this, or we can use our little friend Alexa, who I need to change her name because people are still complaining every time I talk to her, their Alexa goes off. But I can change it to, I think, Amazon and Echo, which all of those are terrible names. You really ought to be able to name it anything you want. They need to work on that. But anyway, this is a paper, and of course there was medical journalism involved. And I'm not even going to dignify the articles that were written about this, saying that PPIs are killing people. So a proton pump inhibitor, we're talking about one of the most commonly prescribed medications for acid reflux and stomach ulcers and duodenal ulcers. And it was estimates of all-cause mortality and cause-specific mortality associated with proton pump inhibitors among U.S. veterans. This was a cohort study. And their objective was to estimate all-cause mortality and cause-specific mortality among patients taking proton. Well, that's okay. It's in the title, so there you go. They did this in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, and the participants were new users of PPIs, and there were 157,000 of them, or H2 blockers, and there were only 56,000 of them. That used to be flip-flop. The H2 blockers are things like Zantac and Pepcid and stuff like that. Those are histamine receptor blockers, and they work to reduce acid as well. But then when the proton pump inhibitors came out, they worked so well that people, you know, pretty much stopped taking the H2 blockers, at least to the extent that they were. All of these things are over the counter, which is really, you know, that's it. You don't know how many people are out there actually taking them, so it is important to know if they're doing something to somebody. So what they did was the main outcome was all-cause mortality and cause-specific mortality. So they were looking at all the people that died from any reason or also things like cardiovascular disease, cancer, stuff like that. So that would be disease cause-specific and all causes where you just lump everybody together. Okay?
Got it.
And they reported as a number of attributable deaths per 1,000 patients. So this is going to make our job very easy when we try to figure out the relative risk versus the absolute risk. Okay? So here we go. There were 45.2 excess deaths, and the range went between 28 and 61.4 per 1,000 patients taking PPIs. So the first thing we need to do is when they tell you what the excess deaths per 1,000 is, they've already done the part of the math that we normally have to do where we take however many people were in the placebo or the, you know, the cohort that didn't take PPIs and then the cohort that did take PPIs. Normally we have to divide, you know, get the same common denominator and then subtract them. We don't have to do that with this. We could just divide the numerator by the denominator and subtract them, and then you get the absolute risk. So they've already done that, but they're doing it per 1,000 patients. So we want to know what the absolute risk is. It's going to be 45.2 divided by 1,000. So I'll get Alexa to do it. Yeah. Scott's just looking at me like a deer in the headlight. Alexa, what's 45.2 divided by 1,000?
45.2 divided by 1,000 is 0.0452.
Okay. So now what we want to do, of course, that math was pretty easy. I forgot. She can't remember. So I need you to take 1 and divide it by 0.0452, and that will give us the number needed to harm.
0.0452. 1 divided by 0.
Oh, my God.
22.12.
Okay. So you have to have 22 people take a PPI before you can report one excess death. So the odds of me being harmed by a PPI, mm-hmm. and when they say excess deaths, they're not really saying what that means. They just had in that cohort that more people died in that cohort than the group that didn't.
But they don't identify what the...
Well, we don't know how they were matched for age and all that kind of stuff. Well, excess means if there were 1,000 over here and there were 1,010 over in this group with the same denominator, then there were 10 excess deaths. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that my odds are 1 in 22 of being harmed by a PPI. So the risk to me is pretty low. Mm-hmm. The risk to society... Of course, with that many people taking these things, now becomes somewhat significant.
Pretty high, yep.
You know? All right. So that's all cause. Let's see here. Okay, so infectious and parasitic diseases. So that's what you're looking at are people who are decreasing the acid content in their stomach to the point where they're now more vulnerable to foodborne illnesses. That was 4.2. excess cases. So let's do 4.2 divided by 1,000 would be 0.0042, right? So let's go 1 divided by 0.0042, and that'll give us the number needed to harm for that particular condition.
238.
There you go. So the odds for me are 1 in 238. The odds for society, again, if you divide all the people taking PPIs by 238, that's still going to be a big number. Okay. So anyway, and then they go and look at chronic kidney disease. Let me see. I was looking for the H2 blockers, and they really just didn't... don't report that in the abstract, but anyway. So that again illustrates the difference between medical journalism that reported this as, basically the sky is falling, and the reality of these numbers. Now, it's still a concern, and it's like, why is this? Because there's everything they looked at, there were excess cases in the PPI section. So I want to see this repeated, make sure that there wasn't some bias introduced, because I'm very surprised that chronic kidney disease or cardiovascular disease, why would that, what's the mechanism of increasing deaths from cardiovascular disease in patients who are taking a proton pump inhibitor? I mean, these numbers look pretty good. This mm-hmm. is a big study, but what we need to find out what that mechanism is. Yeah, and if we figure out what the mechanism is, we may find that this is a marker and not a cause. Mm-hmm. People who have bad acid reflux may have other conditions or other reasons to die, and they just are taking PPIs because they have it, but it's really something about the reflux that's causing these problems, mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
I would like a good study would be to take people who have no GI trouble whatsoever and put them on a PPI and see if they have excess mortality. But that's probably an unethical study. That's the problem. See, it'll be very difficult for us to tease this out and say, yes, it's the PPI or it's the condition for which they're taking the PPI.
But how many people honestly have no GI issues?
Very few people in this country.
Yeah, I'd say minuscule amounts.
Especially in this country, for mm-hmm. sure.
So their conclusion, taking PPIs is associated with a small excess of cause-specific mortality, including death due to cardiovascular disease. The burden was also observed in patients without an indication for PPI. Oh, so they already looked at that. They oh my God.
They thought of everything.
Okay, here we go. Among patients without documented indication for acid suppression drugs, taking PPIs was associated with an excess mortality due to cardiovascular disease and chronic kidney disease and upper GI cancers. That's interesting.
That makes no sense at all. That's what it's supposed to treat.
Because people are taking, you know...
To not get Barrett's esophageal cancer.
Yes, maybe, or they're taking it for no good reason, or they may have just had shitty documentation in the medical record, too. Mm. Just because they didn't have an indication doesn't mean they didn't have one. It just wasn't in the medical record, because this was, you know, they were looking back in time, I think. Mm. Here you go. Taking PPIs was not associated with an excess burden of transportation-related mortality. So, you know, we've talked on this show before that if enough people get run over by a car during a clinical trial, they kind of have to report that. And so they said, no, you know, we don't have a bias toward all mortality. So that takes away one of the arguments that I had on this as well.
So you can take your PPI and drive safely.
Yeah, right.
Don't take your PPIs and drive.
And they also said death due to peptic ulcer disease has there was no association of increased association. Well, now that makes sense. So what they were looking at is negative outcome controls, because obviously if people are taking PPIs, they're going to have fewer peptic ulcers. So they just wanted to see that their methodology was sound enough to show some negative results somewhere. You know, because if it had showed a significant increase in transportation-related deaths, you would go, there's something wrong with their methodology in this study. So, look, you know, it's interesting. I would love to get off my PPI. Mm. It's I'm going to go to the compounding place and see if they can make me a half strength, because I'm on this one called Dexlansoprazole or Dexilant, and it comes in 30s and 60s. I'm going to see if they can make me up 15, see if I can get by.
So is it because you've lost weight you're trying to get off, or no, has that affected any of
like
your
this,
medications?
I want to get off as much medication as I can.
That's
and Scott
question.
And I agree, and PPIs and statins kind of are, you know, they are good for certain things, but if you can not have to take them, it would be better.
Yes.
You know?
Agreed.
So, all right.
But she had a great question though. Once, because you have lost weight, there is a chance you can certainly dial down some of your medications.
Right. I may not have as much mechanical reflux. Right. That's true.
But are there other problems that you had been taking medication for that you do not have to take now? Like blood pressure, does that change?
Yes. I may be able to get off my blood pressure medicine. I've only been on it for a real short period of time. I've always had blood pressure 120 over 70. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it went up to 150. And... so my primary care put me on some medication. Of course, it's the one that got recalled, Losartan, of course. And I've been taking my blood pressure recently. It's been really low, so I'm thinking about backing off on that as well. So, yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I'm off. Hell, I don't take – I was addicted to Lunesta. The Ambien, cousin of Ambien.
For sleep.
Sleep. I was taking 3 milligrams at bedtime, and I took it for the longest time. And then that all-cause mortality study came out and said people who take hypnotics to sleep are 4 times more likely to die than people who don't take them. So I went 3 and then 2 and then 1 and then a half of one. I was stuck on a half of one for a while because I was too nervous to just not take it. And then we went on vacation. I said, screw it. If I can't sleep, I'll sleep during the day. And I just never started to back up again.
Cool.
Yeah.
Perfect.
If you're going to do that, by the way, taper. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any withdrawal whatsoever. But if you just stop it dead and don't do that. Don't do that with benzodiazepines, and those drugs need to be tapered. Okay. All right. You guys got anything?
No.
No.
All right. Okay.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Uh-oh.
Quick, last question for you. Hello, Dr. Steve.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, why do I sneeze when I smell pepper? I mean, I don't sneeze if I smell salt or cinnamon or any other spice, but for some reason it's just pepper. It doesn't always happen. Is it because it's ground so fine that it gets in your sinuses, or what's the dealio, Scadelio? Thank you.
Good question.
Do you guys know what the medical term for sneezing is? I'll give you $10 if you know it.
No. I love to sneeze, though.
I do, too.
You may say
it's kind of orgasmic.
You may say it in Chinese and freak out.
Yes.
What is it? Is it?
No, I don't know.
You don't even know.
You could have made it up. I know. We would never know.
Hey, that fucker would have looked it up.
You messed up.
He would have looked it up. I know.
Yeah, he would.
So the medical term for sneezing is sternutation.
Sternutation.
Yeah. Hmm. We could just call it sneezing. There is a chemical in pepper called piperine. It's an irritant. Gets in the nose. Nerve endings inside the mucous membrane are stimulated, and it wants to get rid of it, and so you sneeze, and that's basically it.
Histaminic response, right?
This is actually I think you'll have a histaminic response after that.
Because it's an irritant.
Because it's an irritant. Right. So if you have an irritant in your nose, the nose will release cells in the nose will release histamine. Histamine opens up blood vessels, which mm-hmm. increases fluid flow to the tissues, and increased fluid flow increases mucus production. It just washes stuff out. Well. And but the sneeze response is actually a nerve pathway.
So when you say histamine increases, does that just mean your nose runs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's why you take an antihistamine when your nose is running.
Yeah. Trying to wash all the shit out of there.
Yep.
Okay.
Did you know that your nose produces 1 to 2 pints of mucus every day?
Pints?
Pints. And here's the thing. You swallow it most mm-hmm. of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Blow it out your nose into a teaspoon and then drink it back.
Oh my God, no.
Exactly. But if you're swallowing it from the back of your nose into your throat, it's fine.
That's different.
Saliva's same way. I'm doing gallons of saliva every day, but spit out, just drool out a teaspoon full of saliva onto a spoon and then hold it out and then drink it. I know. Isn't that horrible? But you're doing it right now. Your mouth is full of saliva. And that's the spoon is sterile. Sterilize the spoon, even. Why is that?
But I don't know. It's just
isn't that
gross.
Weird? Anyway, I don't know why pepper is so good. You could put pepper on everything, and it's good.
I love pepper.
Salt and pepper go together. Not
like peanut butter and jelly.
Not related in any way.
No.
Nothing about them. I mean, pepper is a plant, and salt is sodium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
Black and white.
Yeah, I put pepper on a lot of damn near everything.
Sure. I do too.
I like it.
Without even thinking about it.
And it's not bad for you, is it?
No, it's probably
the only thing in the world that's not bad for you.
But it'll make you sneeze.
It does make you sneeze. It
says here when the Goths...
increased histamine production.
When the Goths defeated Rome in 410, they demanded a ransom of 3,000 pounds of pepper, along with other valuables such as silk.
Huh.
Oh, y'all should start charging pepper.
No, thank you. I can go buy pepper. During the Middle Ages, peppercorns were accepted in lieu of money for dowries, rents, and taxes.
Huh.
That's insane.
Who knew?
During the 19th century, Salem, Massachusetts played an important role in the world pepper trade and made some of America's first millionaires.
Hmm. That's pretty cool.
There's more facts about pepper. You want some facts about pepper?
Y'all son.
That's enough for me.
Y'all son.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Well, shit. Well, I didn't know any of that. All right. Well, come on.
Any more questions?
Yes.
Are we done?
Something strikes me that I didn't tell you why I started taking the antibiotics. So I've had seemingly like a freaking sinus infection for a couple of weeks or upper respiratory or something. I've been fucking blowing my nose and snotting out fucking big old hunks of green tough shit. I'm talking like I'm freaking trying to get it out like hard. I feel
after all that, why say frickin' at that point?
Yeah, I feel a little tickle back there and I'll start working at it like a fucking cat in a hairball. And then up comes this big, hard, tough loogie. Occasionally it's dark, got blood in it. Blood.
Scott, talk about sinus.
Snot.
Sinus Go. Infection, snot, what he should do.
Hard, slash, yucky snot. Don't tell him to drink it.
Yeah. Don't. First of all, don't spit it into the spoon and swallow it down. I would strongly suggest a daily sinus rinse. You can use the Simply Herbals nasal sinus spray. You can use Dr. Steve's fabulous nasal
pot.
What is the thing?
The pot called?
Yeah, Navage.
Navage.
It's a motorized neti pot. Mm-hmm. You don't have to get a weird position. Yep. And you can get it at stuff.drsteve.com. It's the best 80-something bucks I ever spent in my life.
I'd buy the Simply Herbals first. But anyway.
Well, yes, first. But no, absolutely.
But
Dr. Scott's shit is good. The real deal.
Good. But in all seriousness.
You can get it at simplyherbals.net.
Yeah, in all seriousness, if you'll wash that shit out of your head and do it a couple times a day, typically I tell people to do it at least 3 times a day, have to do it before bedtime, because when you lay down at night, all that stuff rolls back in your head and gets clogged up in your throat.
Yep.
Get it out. Clean it out.
Yeah.
Do it religiously for a couple of days and should knock most of it out.
Yeah. And if it's infected, you'll know because it'll come right back and it'll still have color to it. Usually those people will have pain in the maxillary bones, which are the cheekbones. Mm-hmm. And you can tap on them. And if you get pain tapping on those, that's a sign that you could have a sinus infection. Persistent discoloration, getting darker, persistent nasal congestion. You got to really have a lot of that. So a lot of people get called sinusitis, but only few really actually have it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think every molecule of boogers that you can remove is a molecule the body doesn't have to remove it. And the body's got to do it, you know, kind of one molecule at a time with a bunch of cells in there just kind of eating away with it. Whereas we can use a motorized neti pot or a neti pot or Dr. Scott's nasal rinse, and we can do it much more quickly.
Mm-hmm. Wash it out.
Yeah, just wash it out.
I do have a question.
Yeah,
my son has ringworm. Where do you get ringworm and what is it?
Excellent question. A ringworm is actually a skin infection of the by a fungus. Mm-hmm. And you can get that just environmentally. There's these fungi are everywhere. And when you get it on your body, we'll call it tinea corporis. You get it on your head, it's tinea capitis.
So can you get it from a cat?
On
He's convinced
foot,
he got it
pedis.
From a cat.
If the cat...
Possibly.
You know, it's possible.
If the cat was...
You just, every once in a while, one of these colonies, I mean, they're everywhere. Mm. That's why you can make sourdough bread. You leave the sourdough mixer open, and yeast and fungus, it's in that case mostly yeast, just comes out of the air.
Mm.
It's everywhere, and it's on your skin now. But every once in a while, one can take hold and start to grow.
So why is it in a ring? That's just strange how it does.
Well, it has to start somewhere, and then it grows circumferentially out from there.
Mm. You but know. It doesn't get huge. It's all the little same size circles.
There's host factors.
It's just interesting.
Yeah, there's host factors involved. No, it's a very interesting question because you're right. Why didn't it just take over?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we were that vulnerable to stuff in our environment, we wouldn't be here as a species. So right. We have defenses against it. And but those defenses are imperfect, obviously. If they weren't, then the ringworm could never get started in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So when the pressure to grow is met by the pressure keeping it in, you know, when I say pressure, just environmental pressure, then it stops growing. So he can just use some antifungal cream. You can buy it over the counter. Lamisil or ketoconazole, any of that stuff.
Lutramin.
And use it. Yes. Use it for at least a week, maybe even two after it's gone, because sometimes it'll look like it's gone. It's really not. And then you stop using it and it comes right back.
Got to be consistent.
Oh, okay.
Got to be consistent. Now, if he does that and it doesn't go away, then he needs to go see somebody and get it checked and make sure that's really what we're dealing with.
Do we have time for a real quick funny story about ringworm?
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, so one of our local friends.
Do we have time?
Well, I don't know how much.
Just killing time. Hey, that's all we're doing.
We have a friend here, a local guy. He's an attorney and he's a profound hypochondriac, and we're having lunch one day, and he's like, Scott, look at my finger. What the hell is that? I said, oh hell, buddy, that's ringworm. He goes, oh goddamn, is it contagious? I went, oh my god, it's highly contagious. He goes, well, what the hell I do? I said, first of all, please tell me you hadn't touched your penis. I said, because this stuff grows in a ring. And I said, and hell, I almost said his name. I said, hell, it will grow in a ring. I've seen it grow in a ring around the penis, and it sloughs off. And he almost lost his mind. And everybody at the table was about to die. Finally, I was like, hey, man, listen, you're really fine.
You're totally
it's a
fine.
Fungus.
Wow, you have to rub a lot of cream in it.
Yeah, when I tell you who it is, you'll get it.
Okay.
I'm
all
like,
right,
oh, my
yeah,
God, it was hilarious. Hilarious.
Terrible. That's funny.
All right. Are we done with that?
Let's do it.
Okay. Oh, I'm on the wrong mouse. There we go. Okay, one more. We'll do one more.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Mike from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Mike.
I was curious, of what age should an adult get a vaccine?
A what?
Start over.
Get what?
A vaccine?
A vaccine.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Mike from Pennsylvania. I was curious,
hey,
of what age should an adult get a shingles vaccination?
Shingles.
And I've heard there are a few different types. Can you enlighten me on that? If I may... Could I plug my band?
No.
Beautiful Disaster. We are out of the Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. Eric?
He plugged his band once before, didn't he?
I've never heard of
it. No, I've never heard of it.
You can visit us at Beautiful Disaster on Facebook to see our upcoming events. And
okay, this is like a thing, I guess. So you can call in with a pretty good medical question, which I will answer, and then plug whatever you want to plug.
Use videos.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
He's smart.
Yes. Yeah, I have no problem with it. It's just a bullshit show, so... totally fine. Feel free.
Shingles, go.
Okay. So, I've talked about this new shingles vaccine. It kicks your ass.
And how much you loved it when you got yours.
It kicks... Have
the
you done yours?
The vaccine does?
Fuck, no, I'm old as old as you.
How old are you?
51.
Oh, you need to have it. It's men and women over 50, dude. You need to go get it.
Oh, 60.
Nope.
Oh,
no, that was the old one.
Oh.
Okay.
How old are you, Diane?
50.
Are you really?
Mm-hmm.
She's young.
When did you turn 50?
July. Remember you were invited and you didn't come? Oh, wait, you weren't invited.
That was a
invited.
Year ago, though.
Yeah, that was a year. So I'll be 51 in 2 weeks.
It was a hell of a party.
Where was I?
Drinking?
You were out at the beach.
Oh, okay, okay.
Or somewhere.
Your 2 week
you were
vacation.
Out of town.
When's
yeah.
your...
The 12th.
Okay. Oh, that'll be the day before we're leaving. Okay, yeah,
this
let's do something.
Friday.
Yeah, let's do something.
Okay.
Okay, well, Diane's old. I always tell people, you know, I tell the comedians that I've got a supermodel to pick you up. I said she's
and
six.
And then Diane shows up.
No, and she's 6 feet tall and blonde and beautiful. I said she's a supermodel. I say, you know, admittedly an aging supermodel, but a supermodel nonetheless.
Better than
an aging supermodel is still a supermodel.
Better than nothing. Hell yeah.
I think Carol Alt.
I'll take it.
Carol Alt. Look up how old Carol Alt is. She's still.
Well, fuck it. It doesn't
Christy
fucking matter.
Brinkley.
It doesn't matter.
It
exactly.
doesn't matter.
See, it doesn't matter.
Christy Brinkley's old and gorgeous.
She's 60 something.
She's old.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. She looks pretty. And she doesn't look all plasticked up.
Mm-mm.
You know, some of these folks, they do just a way one too many you know, procedures, and they start looking like they're trying to look young, and they don't really. They kind of look alien, but Christie Brinkley just looks awesome. But anyway, all right. So,
so shingles vaccine 50. Shingles,
so both of you need to be getting this, and it will kick your ass. And but here's the problem with shingles. So what, if people don't know what shingles is, it is chickenpox come back for one last hurrah. When you have chickenpox when you're a kid, it retreats, you know, because you don't have it forever. It retreats, and some of the viruses live in these collections of nerve cells called ganglia that are close to the spinal column. And then during a period of stress or for whatever God knows reason, they'll come out one more time, usually when you're over 50. You can get them before that. By the way, if you get shingles every 3 weeks, you have herpes, you don't have shingles. So I've had people say, well, I have recurrent shingles, I get it every 3 weeks. It's like, no, it's herpes. But
good to know.
So shingles will always follow that nerve. So that nerve, if it's in your chest, you know, will start in the back, and then it will come down and around following the rib cage and the following that peripheral nerve that that ganglion is associated with. If it's in your face, though, it you can get them in your eye. And those, to me, are the worst shingles. Most people get it on the abdomen or chest wall, but every once in a while you get somebody get it in the face, and then it gets in their eye. And the bad thing about this is, unlike chickenpox that's self-limited, you know, it comes and then it goes away and you don't really have anything, for whatever reason, when these stupid viruses come back, they can stimulate the pain fibers in the skin, and they'll just continue to stimulate for years afterward. It's called postherpetic neuralgia. And if you get it in your eye, there's a small possibility that you could have that pain for the rest of your life. Now, I will trade 4 days of feeling like I have a mild flu to not get shingles in my eye, you know? So... and the shingles vaccine is the only way to protect against shingles and this postherpetic neuralgia. And the CDC recommends all healthy adults 50 years and older get 2 doses of the shingles vaccine separated by 2 to 6 months. So so you get it, just go do it. Just go do it. Do it on a weekend when you don't have anything to do. Do it on Friday. You'll be fine by Monday.
I don't want to waste my weekend being sick. I'll go do it on a Monday.
So you can be sick at work. Anyway. Okay, well, that's fine. Okay, fair enough. Everybody has different priorities.
I like the way she thinks.
But you you get it. Like, if you get it today, then you wait at least 2 months and then get it again. And if you wait the full 6 months, if you go over that, they just say just get it as close to that as you can. But just put it on your calendar and remind yourself. You can go to any pharmacy in this country at this point and just get a vaccine. Take some ibuprofen. You know, it wasn't that. Look, it sucked. I felt like I got run over by a truck. You know, metaphorically, that's how you feel. At least that's how I felt. I had pain at the injection site, and I had muscle aches and pains, and I just felt malaise. I just felt bad. It was moderate. It wasn't severe, but it was really noticeable. You know, started in about, you know, 24 hours after the first injection. But what that's telling you is it works.
Well,
but this Shingrix is more than 90% effective at preventing shingles and postherpetic neuralgia. And it's long-lasting, too. Now, the old Zostavax was for people 60 years and older, and it was not nearly as effective as this one is.
So does it last 50 years? Because I'm going to live till I'm 100, probably.
Well, that's an excellent question. I don't think they know yet. So what they'll have to do is they'll do post-marketing surveillance to see if people continue to have antibodies circulating to the Shingrix vaccine. And if they don't, then they may recommend that you get a booster in 10 years or 20 years.
How long has this vaccination been available?
This one is new. It's really in the last couple of years.
Oh.
Yeah.
You go first.
Okay.
Now, you should get Shingrix, even if you've had shingles, because I've had people say, well, I've had shingles, I'm not going to get the vaccine. Get it anyway, because you can get them again.
Ugh.
Even if you received the Zostavax before, and even if you're not sure you ever had chickenpox, because this should prevent you from getting chicken pox if you've never had chicken pox, too, and you don't want to get chicken pox when you're an adult. Okay? All right?
Yep.
What else?
Wrap it up.
Well,
you That's wrap, all I got.
Wrap it up.
You wrap it up.
I can't wrap it up.
All right.
I forgot how to do it.
Let's see here.
Hey, is there between a pee boner and a regular boner? And if someone has ED, could they still get pee boners? And why and how would that happen?
Yeah, great question. He's talking about the proverbial morning wood, where you get an erection when you have to urinate. And my hypothesis on this, I've seen several studies or articles about it, not so much studies. But my hypothesis is that since in reproduction, when we have an erection, you find it impossible to urinate through a full erection. The reason for that is when you ejaculate into a vagina so that because we forget that's really what sex was designed for. You want the sperm to stay in there, the semen to stay in there and try to find an egg to fertilize.
Right.
And if you were able to urinate, not only would it be gross and the woman would probably never have sex with you again, but you're going to wash that semen out and make it less likely that you're going to be able to procreate. So I think that then the other side of it is, it's not good for you when you're a cave person to be, you know, urinating where you're sleeping.
Right.
For lots of different reasons, because that scent will draw saber-toothed tigers and stuff like that. So we developed this mechanism where you get an erection so that you can't piss the bed. Right? Because you
can't piss
through an
erection. So then
what
causes the pee wood boner?
That you got a full bladder. And you're
that
asleep.
Makes your penis hard?
Yes, so that you're not pissing the bed. You know,
it keeps you from peeing.
What it's doing is...
Oh.
It's keeping you from peeing.
Okay.
Because
gotcha.
What's really happening is that sphincter is tightening, and there's... The consequence of that is you get an erection at the same time.
Okay.
You get an erection, the sphincter tightens. You tighten the sphincter, you get an erection. So there's no real benefit to the erection itself. It's just that sphincter is tightening to just give you that extra guarantee that you're not going to piss in the bed.
And when it does it stops the flow of blood coming out of the penis and stops the flow of urine going through the penis.
There you go.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'll give
sense.
You one.
Give yourself a bill.
Very good. All right. Well, let's get out of here. Thanks. Always go to Dr. Scott and Lady Diagnosis. You're delightful. Can't forget Rob Sprance, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teff, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ovcharski, Eric Nagel, Roland Campo, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, Fizz Watley, whose early support of the show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m., Eastern, Sunday at 5 p.m. on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.